Good evening and welcome. No need to touch your dial. You are listening to RTE Lyric FM, and indeed, it is the Astrolab with me, Vlad Smishkevich. You know, they say don't judge a book by its cover, but if tonight's program was a book, its cover might well be up there, hidden on the top shelf of the magazine rack at your corner petrol station. Well, I'll keep it as clean as I can tonight, though. For your consideration this evening, I propose we discuss sex. Specifically, how have we dealt with sex in our music? What kinds of metaphors and language, what sort of melody and harmony have been used to describe not only the attraction between people, but also the most intimate act itself, and those moments of ecstasy, and of all the other lovely stuff in between? To inspire the title of tonight's program...
You're listening to 96-99 RTE Lyric FM. Good evening, I'm Liz Nolan, and you're welcome to A World of Song. In a special feature, tonight we speak with one of the outstanding leader interpreters of our time, British tenor Mark Padmore.
Now we're on one of the side canals at the moment here in Venice, one of these wonderful, wonderful gondolas, of which there are very many. These gondolas are about 36 feet in length. How they steer one against the other along these very, very narrow waterways is beyond comprehension, but they do it because they're trained to do it. If you hear noise, it's because we are approaching the Grand Canal now. And obviously when you come out here, you have commercial boats. Remember, there's no traffic in Venice except for seafaring traffic. So we're lapping out now, and I can actually see the Rialto Bridge from here, which is quite something. And obviously the place is heavily populated because they're here in the heart of the summer. But the noise levels obviously increase considerably when you're out here. As I say, there are pleasure boats coming up and down. Plus, you have water taxis, and you have what is, to all intents and purposes, huge buses going up and down, taking people to and fro on the Grand Canal. So it's quite something. Really, it's quite something to see. I'm glad we're wearing our hats today, and our trusty legs are out, giving them a go, giving them an airing. Irish legs, everybody. Not a pretty sight, but that's all we have to share. And the smell of lovely food from that restaurant just in front of us. Michael's just asked me a very interesting question. He said, is a female gondolier a gondoless? If I could find one, I would ask one. But speaking of interesting facts about Venice, we're now outside the building where George Clooney got married. You know, if he got married in that one, things are not going well. It's definitely this one here with the candle abra affair in the centre. That's it there. It looks like they've kind of wedding seats waiting for us to alight. We weren't invited, so quite frankly, my dear, he's supposed to be in Dublin as we speak. We miss you too, George.
Choosy about a song. It's not every song that turns me on. I remember Charlie Lennon about 30 years ago gave me a recording of Sting, as they call him down here. Sting. Sting.
Sting.
Singing Fields of Barley. Remember me. Was that Sting, was it?
That was Sting, all right. Sting.
I think so, yeah. And it just didn't do anything for me. I don't know. He gave me a recording of it, and I just don't know. I mean, it's a beautiful song, and I love listen to people singing Sean Cain and all these people, but it just didn't do anything.
I have a favourite of yours, actually, that is on that album that you made with Katrina Mackay and Chris Stout. You do a gorgeous version of that Shetland song, Rowan Fowla Doon.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That's a lovely one, isn't it?
It's beautiful. It really is. I think I made a Learodi of the words, of course.
You did not. It was lovely.
I never learned. Hoot be was the harden a papa, ruin full of doin. Sheer a white and vapa rawir, fallen out for year. Torn peel row other she swin, it all the neal and tusk. Body tenders lass are mudding, lassing.
Saturday night from 7, Opera Night on RTE Lyric FM comes to you from the National Opera House for the 64th Wexford Festival Opera. We'll have a live performance of Guglielmo Ratcliffe by Pietro Mascagni, a four-act tragedy set in 19th century Scotland, featuring an international cast directed by Fabio Ceresa, and the chorus and orchestra of Wexford Festival Opera conducted by Francesco Cilufo. Join me, Niall Carroll, live from the National Opera House Wexford this Saturday for Opera Night on RTE Lyric FM.
Music by Brahms there, Hans Christian Brien, who was performing there. The trio in A major for clarinet, cello and piano. Hope you enjoyed that. The music by Brahms. Now, I'm coming to you live from Sarajevo this morning. Sarajevo, which is the capital of Bosnia, but not where the football team play. They play in Zenica, which is 70-odd kilometres up the road, up the valley, towards the northwest, out of Sarajevo. But Sarajevo has had its troubles over the history of the piece. And, you know, it's hard to believe that things were as bad as they were in Sarajevo. It's over 20 years ago now. But just being in Sarajevo and seeing the history that's here, like this is where the Archduke was assassinated, which is generally deemed to be the event that started World War I. And then, of course, in the 90s, 20-odd years ago, there were the problems with the conflict in the Balkans. Yugoslavia, this is 1992, was disintegrating, and Bosnia had become the latest of its constituent republics to break away. The Serbian-dominated army, it took over the hills around the capital, and when you're here, you can see just what that would mean to a city that's wedged in a valley. Big city, but it's linear because it's wedged in this valley. And anyway, the Serbian-dominated army, it took over the hills around Sarajevo, and it was attempting to destroy Bosnia by bombarding it into submission. Food was hard to come by. One afternoon in May in 1992, a queue formed outside a bakery that had actually got in a supply of flour. Well, in from the hills flew a mortar shell, scored a direct hit from the queue, and it killed 22 civilians. Well, this happened just up the street from an apartment block where one of the cellists of the Sarajevo Philharmonic had his home. His name was Vedran Smailovic.
May 27th, 1992, there was queue for bread, and it was a small bakery in my neighborhood, and huge queue, and instead of bread, huge explosion, 22 people instantly dead, over 100 wounded. I mean, everybody was on a shock, including myself. And helping to your wounded friends, to your neighbors, I know each of them. We know each other. And it's very hard to walk on a street, carry somebody, because the blood and it's very slippery, you know? So next morning, I just take my cello, take tuxedo, walk out, have no clue why I take cello, why I take tuxedo, and find myself on that place where was grenade explode. Take chair from neighboring restaurant, sit, start to play. When I start to play, I don't know what am I going to play. After a few tones, I realized that's Albinoni Adagio.
In 1950, Dick Farrelly signed a contract with the Peter Morris Music Company, and they engaged a singer called Terry the Irish Minstrel to record the song.
This here is an old 78 record. It's the first recording of the Isle of Inishfree, sung by Terry the Irish Minstrel. And as you can see on the old label there, my dad's name is spelt Farrell, as opposed to Farrelly.
Some folks who say that I'm a dreamer, and I've no doubt there's truth in what they say.
Terry's version of the Isle of Inishfree didn't do very well commercially. A year later, the Peter Morris Music Company sent that record to their American counterparts.
And then I got the wonderful news one day that Bing Crosby had recorded the song over in the States. That was the zenith as far as I was concerned.
I've met some folks who say that I'm a dreamer, and I've no doubt there's truth in what they say.
For a songwriter, you know, the hardest thing to arrive at is simplicity. First of all, you have to have a musical talent and a good ear, and you have to have a flair for language if you're going to be a songwriter who does melody and lyric. I'd say if you stop 10 people in the street, at least half of them would be able to give you that first line. I've met some folks who say that I'm a dreamer, and I've no doubt there's truth in what they say, but your body's bound to be a dreamer when all the things he loves are far away. That's a glorious first line. It's accessible and immediately takes you to a place, somebody's far from home. It just says, emigrant, far from home, without laboring the point.
From that dear lovely Isle of Inishfree.
A song that flows as effortlessly as Isle of Inishfree. It's very significant. My guess is that Dick was a sort of instinctive songwriter, that the music was just kind of running through his head all the time. Like, for example, on his bus trip from Kells to Dublin. I'd love to be on that bus. If I thought I could come up with a song like that on a bus between Meath and Dublin, I'd be on it every day.
I'm once again back home in Innisfree.
Here we have a yellowed, very old envelope with Bing Crosby's name on the front cover. Paramount Studios, Hollywood Sunset Boulevard. But in that envelope, a photograph of Bing signed to Dad, to Dick Farrelly, thanks for a lovely song, Bing Crosby.
I met Bing Crosby. He seemed very glad to see me, and naturally I was very delighted to meet him.
Make music fit for angels, and watch the rivers laughing as they flow.
Dick Farrelly had achieved his second hit single. The song initially sold over 150,000 copies of sheet music in Ireland and the UK. It remained in the British top 20 charts for 7 months, reaching its highest ranking of number 2, and by then had sold over 400,000 copies. Dublin band leaders voted it the number one tune of the year.
I still would choose the Isle of Inishfree.
You did bring a favourite instrument with you tonight, and I'd love to hear a tune if you do that for us.
What the guitar is to the axe, the bouzouki is to the hatchet. So here's the bouzouki, and I'll play a tune that, funny enough, you mentioned Steve earlier on, Steve Cooney,
mm-hmm.
And I just tell you that I wrote this tune, I wrote it on a keyboard. And I wrote it for an album that Moving Hearts is making. It was the instrumental album we made before we broke up in 1985. And I wrote a piece called Tribute to Padraig O'Donnell. Now, I composed that on keyboards. It went straight to Davy Spillane, who kind of breathed like beautiful life into it, playing it on the pipes. And it went on from there. And my role in it after that was accompanying, you know.
Okay.
So when Steve, like, this must be, I suppose, could be 15 years ago, between 10 and 15 years ago, I met Stephen Donegal late one night. He dropped into the house and he said, "Go on, play Paddy O'Donnell." And I realised I had never played it.
Hmm.
And I reluctantly then I did. He kind of kept
there
at me.
There and then.
I did. Yeah. And I realised that it sat right sort of under the fingers on the board of the bouzouki. So here it is again.
Go for it.
Willie Clancy spent the rest of his life, about 15 years, in Milltown Malbay. He was married to Doreen Healy, he worked as a carpenter, and many people came to visit him there, not just for his music, but also his company, his personality, and his thoughts about traditional music.
He spent his whole life, I think, thinking about it. Even whatever he was doing, there was music going through, he said all the time. You'd know that because he'd be either whistling or diddling the tune, you know. I suppose if you met anyone in any kind of a trade, they would talk about the trade, but when you met Willie, it was all music. And it wasn't just music, it was people. The people who played it and how they played it and the respect he had for them, you know. And he didn't even say anyone was bad, I think.
Might he have thought it, though?
Well, sure he would have thought.
On the last occasion when we visited him, he played a particular tune and somebody remarked that Seamus Ennis played that as well. But he didn't put as much into it as Willie did. And Willie said, "I often said it to him." He said, "You know, you could do more with that." He said, "I do like to ponder on what I'm playing and think about it and just see how I can do that little bit more with it."
There are certain tunes that I will always associate with Willie Clancy. I remember in particular going to one of the earlier Chenals in Bettystown. And I always had this, and I wasn't the only one, sense of anticipation, because we knew Willie Clancy would be there and we knew that he was going to produce something. He'd produce some new tune or tunes. And I remember that the first time I heard the jig, The Humours of Ballylochlann, and as far as I'm aware, I know that the people around me, all keen students of piping, it's the first time they ever heard it. And it was as though this was Willie's gift almost, you know, to us and to piping. Like, he gave us this new tune. But there are, you know, so many other tunes always associated with Willie Clancy. These are tunes that have a kind of an ancient, a really ancient ring about them.
In choral singing? Well, now is the time to plan your group's entry in the 2015 RTE Lyric FM Choirs for Christmas competition. Choral groups of all kinds, up to semi-professional standard, are welcome to submit a recording of one seasonal piece on MP3 format only. There are cash prizes in a number of categories, with the best overall choir winning €750. Find out more now at our website, rte.ie/lyricfm. Closing date for entries, 12 noon on Friday, 4th of December.
A selection of the best entries will be played on Classical Daytime each weekday starting December 8th.
Talk to us about Jessica Fletcher. What was it, do you think, that made her tick? Describe her to us in your head.
Well, she started off as a rather droll, funny kind of character. She was a little bit off-center, you know? And that was a way to go. And I thought, well, that should suit me, you know? But then as I began to play her, I found I wanted her to be more bona fide and real, and not a kind of character person, but a real woman, and who had had a successful marriage, whose husband had died. She had been a teacher. She was a smart, intelligent woman, and she wanted to write, and she could write. So we did it the first few years. She was a little bit cutesy, and I don't know how many of you might have seen the very first ones, but she was a little bit cutesy, which I didn't particularly like when I saw it, although it was beginning already to get an audience. It took quite a while, but finally, as the success of it began to be very apparent, we found my husband and I, and my group, including my brother, who was one of the writers, we felt we were in the driver's seat, that we could sort of command attention as to what we would like this show to be. So we worked at it and we worked at it until it became the show, which it was about a third of the way through, or maybe two-thirds of the way through, not two-thirds, a third or a half, I'd say. She suddenly took over, she dressed better, she was more an outgoing woman of the world rather than, and also a teacher. She was teaching again in New York, and her life, she took a flat in New York, so she wasn't stuck out in Cabot Cove. Now, some people were very disappointed and only wanted her to be stuck out in Cabot Cove. But how many murders can you have in a small town?
I think I read that over the 12-year run of Murder, She Wrote, that Angela Lansbury as Jessica Fletcher solved 274 murders. That's pretty good. But we're going to take another clip, this time of Murder, She Wrote. I'm not sure which Jessica, you know, in year this is, but let's take a great clip from Murder, She Wrote.
My first music was Shannos and the Whistle, traditional, you know, tunes. And Sean O'Riordan was my big, huge influence, still would be, and his work. I mean, I think most of Irish music, most of Irish kind of ensemble music is still under his shadow. And he's one of the bars to live up to. His sense of kind of orchestration with music, you know, the use of the Bowron, and the Bowron was hanging on people's walls and really only used sort of like in certain parts of Ireland, Sligo maybe, and it was taken down as a novel thing, or taken down on the Wren Day, and then he realized, you know, he pushed it as a something that could be a very powerful tool in arranging Irish music. And And the rest is history.
He made it a living instrument.
He did. He re-breathed life back into it, maybe.
Yeah. You didn't bring one with you today, did you?
I did. It's in the bag. It has my wet shirt in it from the Marquee in Drumlish, which we played last night. You know, there's a song called The Marquee in Drumlish.
I didn't. There is now, or there was anyway?
There has been. And
really?
There was. I think maybe Declan Nerney or somebody. But yeah. We played The Marquee in Drumlish last night. And My wet shirt is still in my Bowron case.
Had you a great night?
We did. We had a brilliant night. I mean, I was remarking, I went for a little walk around the area and just thinking of the country that we, you know, every county has magic and beauty. And there's also a genius. Like there's always a sense of genius in every county as well. It might lean more towards storytelling or language, or it might lean towards music. But there's kind of quiet people who come and take out their tools and play and evoke incredible magic and culture. And that's something I think that marks us, that sets us apart from a lot of European countries that have been overwhelmed by industrialization. We kind of, it came later to us.
Are you going to play the baron? Are you,
well, I can play anything you want.
Well, what are we going to
play? Yeah, sure.
What do you think? What could you play? What would you?
Well, I could play a jig. There's Ban Fodin, which is a twisted vitriolic song where the jealousy and the basically Ban Fodin. It's a famous, you'd know it. It's the woman singing, "I wish I was Pauline's wife. I wish I was Pauline's wife, and that his wife be dead." And then at the third verse, she says, "May her legs be broken, and may her legs and her bones be broken."
Hello and welcome to 6.05, the new time for each day's Culture File. We're back with Ted Dynan of the Department of Psychiatry in UCD this time to talk more about the microbes that live on or inside us and affect every aspect of who we are, from our taste in food to our moods, personalities and mental health. So far we've been in the lands of bacteria, but as Ted points out this time, we also host plenty of viruses that may have a part in controlling things, and we'll learn how the music of AC/DC, among others, might create a healthy relationship with our tiny friends.
The microbiome will consist of bacteria, but it will also consist of other things like viruses. And we actually know very little about the human virome. What are the viruses that you and I carry, and what health benefits do they confer on us, if any? And that's a question we don't know. The last decade has seen an explosion of research in relation to the microbiota and the bacteria within. But when it comes to the virome and viruses in the intestine, we're only scratching the surface at the moment. It is quite intriguing, and there have been studies published suggesting that cognitive function, even in healthy people, could be influenced by viruses within the throat or whatever. I mean, there have been studies within the last few years, suggesting that cognitive function could be negatively impaired by carrying certain viruses in one's throat. But we have very little understanding of the complexity of the human virome and the extent to which it contributes to controlling or organizing our behavior.
The 8-hour work sleep is, to quote its composer Max Richter, his personal lullaby to a frenetic world, a manifesto for a slower pace of existence that's meant to be listened to at night. Before completing the work, Richter consulted the American neuroscientist David Eagleman about the mechanics of the mind in its sleep state. Richter intended it to be experienced in one sitting while a listener sleeps. So, without further ado, here now in its entirety, the set of variations taking different trips through a known landscape which amount to Max Richter's sleep. Max Richter, keyboards and electronics, the American Contemporary Music Ensemble, and the voice of soprano Grace Davidson. Sweet dreams.